Clement Maniatella Show.
Coming to you live from the ANC National Policy Conference
on 702.
All right, it's 20 minutes before 11 o'clock. Here's a conversation I had this morning with Minister Mamoloko Kubai, who is the head of the Economic Transformation Subcommittee. Minister, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Clement.
Is it all systems goes this morning?
I understand. So I have not been part of only the organizing because I've been doing my work of the economic class, and you guys have been keeping me busy.
Yeah, you have been busy. So there's a lot that hinges on this conference. This country finds itself at a crossroads, you would argue. There are so many challenges that we're facing, and the economy is probably part of the top challenges we're facing. Just tell me about the discussions you will be having as the ANC to somehow deal with the economic crisis we're facing in the country.
No, definitely. I think let me greet your listeners as well. Definitely, this conference is critical for us. One, for those of us who are deployed, to reaffirm the positions and the work that we are doing, to ensure that when we report, we are able to say this is how far we've gone in the implementation of our resolution. You'd note that ordinarily ANC would have an NGC, National General Council. Mm. And because of COVID, we didn't have that. So we've not had an opportunity as the NEC to engage with our structures on the work that we have been doing since conference. This is the first time, and it's very critical. But also looking in terms of the country where it is, we come out of almost, we'll say out, but not completely out, COVID-19, its impact on the economy, devastating, as we're trying to recover and say that we are implementing our economic reconstruction and recovery plan. Then we had the riots, July riots, we had the disasters. Then we have the Russian and Ukraine issue that impacts on the recovery of the economy. So these are challenges. And for ordinary South Africans who are sitting at home today looking at ANC saying we are gathering here, what they're looking for is hope. Whether we'll deal with the issues around poverty, unemployment, just unable to survive because cost of living is becoming higher and higher each day. Mm-hmm. So the conversations here is bringing different minds, different role players who would assist us to have conversations, mm-hmm. but to test what we have as the engagement to say, will these policies assist us in changing the landscape?
How different is this policy conference going to be from, let's say, the one in 2017? Because what we've often seen with the ANC is that these kind of conferences are almost an opportunity for delegates to test the temperature and express really who they want to be the next leader of the organization. Even in the policy discussions that take place, you can tell by who's with which faction because of which policy they back. So how much of this is going to actually be about policy and less about proxy for leadership?
Look, we're hoping that we don't get there, especially from my side as the head of the chairperson of the economic transformation. My hope is that delegates could really reflect to say South Africa is looking for leadership and the ANC needs to provide that. We're hoping, and this is the message I've been saying to many of them as we engage in the Provincial General Council, that we need to remember, because the majority of them who are coming here are our volunteers, I'll call, who do door-to-door when we go to elections and who get feedback from constituencies. And I've been saying to them, the importance is to carry that message that you've gotten when you got into the houses and talked to the people. Whether we can stop the proxy debates, I don't think one can control that if it does, but we can only appeal as leadership so that we continue to appeal to society and appeal to our members to say we need to be realistic. Mm. We need to wake up and catch a wake-up call to say we don't have the luxury of these petty fights. We don't have the luxury of squabbles. South Africa will chuck us out if we do not focus.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for.
So part of this policy conference is not just to chart the way forward, but you've got to review some of the policies that you've adopted as an organization.
Yes.
I'm looking at the South African Reserve Bank. The delegate said, nationalize the Reserve Bank. Delegate said, I changed the constitution to allow for land expropriation without compensation. They said, we need a state bank. They said, we need the basic income grant. In fact, this is from way back. You've not implemented any of this. What do you say to them today when they argue you have failed as the leadership of this organization?
No, we have a report back, Clement. We've not failed. There has been, remember, when you take a decision and a policy, you go and try and implement. And when there are challenges, to come back and say, this is with experience practically. Let's take the Reserve Bank. We agreed that we must nationalize the Reserve Bank. We went out to go and start the process, and the report that we are getting, remember, we had private shareholders. We have private shareholders, not only domestically, but internationally. Mm. Now, part of the agreements we have signed as the country is also on terms of when you are to take over the shareholders, you have to pay them. Mm. So you can't nationalize without compensation. Mm. And in that process, one of the issues is that you got to, then you had the share pricing going up, becoming unaffordable for us as a state. Now you have priorities to deal with poverty, unemployment in the country. Do you prioritize buying shares of National Reserve Bank, or do you prioritize giving services to South Africans in a constrained environment? Mm. We took a decision to prioritize providing services while we're still looking at other ways that we can deal with. And part of the reason why we're coming back to a conference is to say to them, should we as ANC start looking at how we take decisions? In corporates, you'd have people talking about market-sensitive decisions. Mm. So we take market-sensitive decisions in a public domain and increase the value of those shares. Mm. That's what happened. Now, with that, we'll propose to conference to say, shouldn't there be a mechanism put in place, or saying, let's look, the NEC must look at mechanisms in future of sensitive, market-sensitive discussions that can be protected and not be in the public domain before they are ready to be implemented, so that we don't face the hurdles we have with the Reserve Bank. So that's part of the feedback we have. On the issue of redistribution of land, we took a decision to say we'll go back and do the amend the Constitution, Section 25. We know as the NC we don't have 2/3 majority. Yeah. Now, that's one of the challenges. Remember, 2017, we were going towards elections with the hope that we can increase our numbers and have, we don't have the numbers. Now, part of the report back will say to our constituencies and to the members and the delegates here is that we're not able to amend the Section 25 because we do not agree with parties in the manner that they want. Mm. We want the land to belong to the people. For example, other parties would say, no, we don't support that. It must be a free market. The others will say, actually, the land must be owned by the state, which we are differing in opinion and ideologically on that. But what we'll give as a report is that we've had an expropriation bill that is there to assist us in terms of that. We'll report on the fast tracking of the land claims that we've been able to see. That's why we established the IMC on land that is chaired by the Deputy President. Consistently, we're looking at that process, looking at the hurdles and resolving them. That's why you'd have the 14,000 hectares of land given to human settlements to be able to provide for accommodation for South Africans closer to where they work. So there is a report that we have in those regard. On the State Bank...
Before we get to the State Bank, I would argue that as the ANC, you failed to test Section 25 of the Constitution. So there was this obsession about changing the Constitution, but you had not actually tested whether it allows you to expropriate land for public good, which actually it does.
No, it does. I expropriate as the Minister of Human Settlements. I've expropriated without compensation. So it's not that it's not happening. So that's part of the report. I've done two...
So if that's happening, why do we need to change the Constitution
then? Since 2006, I have actually... Not 2006, 6 August.
Yeah. Were you even in Parliament in 2006?
No. Yeah. Dad, I became a member.
So if you were able to do
August
that...
August 6, since, so you can count, it's less than a year.
Yeah.
I have expropriated. Because expropriation for me, it says, in terms of public good, when I can show that I need the land in this particular area for human settlements, and I do not have any land in the hands of the state around that area, I'm able to, and if I can. So two areas, you can expropriate with compensation. I can set the price. If we say somebody, we say we want to buy the land and we feel that they've put the land price higher than what we can afford, then we put the expropriation with compensation at a ceiling that we can afford as a state. We've done that in Western Cape. I've done that. Then we can do expropriation without compensation in areas where we feel the land. For example, if a land, so far it's almost like a land where we say, this is a land, who is ownership? You can't find owner, say, I expropriate it. So we've been able to do that. Because quite a number, in KZN, I said, if we can't find a suitable land that is in the hands of government or private sector that we can take, buy reasonably, and we can't, and no one is willing to give us the land. I did give the notice to everyone to say, anyone who owned land, you must know that I can expropriate without compensation in the public good.
So is there still a need then to change the constitution if you are able to do that?
There are others who are arguing, and that's why we are saying we'll give feedback today and give a review to say, is there a necessary need for us to continue to say we must amend the constitution? So that's feedback that we are
giving. Some people are going to listen to that and think, what we were warning about the Cyril Ramaphosa administration is happening. Privatization. I mean, when I was going through the discussion documents, I got a sense that, you know, the ANC is open to greater private sector involvement in the economy. When you look at the proposals around SOEs and whether or not we must sell some of them, rationalize some of them, what do you say to some delegates who are more left-leaning, who are going to say, you guys are pandering to the private sector, into business, and this is what we were warning about this Ramaphosa presidency?
I'm also left-leaning. I can say that safely. I believe in transformation. I've driven transformation action-wide. The issue here is to be realistic. What has made us lose confidence, or public lose confidence in us, is where sometimes we make resolutions that are not practical, are not in the interest of South Africa.
Like Reserve Bank.
You know, so we've got to be practical. And that's what we are trying to do with this document. Practical, so that we can regain confidence. Now, when we talk about the issue of more private sector participation, we've never said the state is a socialist state, for example, that it's only the state that has a role to play. We've always argued around a mixed economy where both public and private sector has a role. And that's what it is. The government continues to have a greater role in terms of regulatory environment, creating conducive environment for operation for everybody to conserve, but also developmental in nature. Now, when I talk about state-owned entities, I say we have about 700 state-owned entities. Majority of us can't even count 20. How are they relevant to us when we don't even know that they exist? So that's the argument I have. One is that we can't keep state-owned entities for the sake of them. What role do they have to play in the economy and in the developmental mandate? Now, that's the criteria we are using. We are saying if a state-owned entity, we continue as a state to pay for the people who are working there, salaries, to pay for their buildings, their offices, and everything else. But there is no value to the state with this entity. There's no need for us to keep it. But you would have state-owned entities that are very critical and are battling in finances. Shouldn't we take that money that we are utilizing in the state-owned entities that do not have a role and put them, for example, DINEL. DINEL is one of the strategic entities that South Africa must keep as a state-owned entity. Currently is battling financially. Shouldn't we close one of the entities and take the money there and take it to DINEL and actually make sure that DINEL recovers?
Yeah.
So that's the argument.
But how do you regulate the private sector involvement? Because as you say, your own policies as the ANC, especially on SOEs, have always been, we use them as ways to implement this developmental agenda. But how do you implement the developmental agenda when you don't have like overwhelming majority? For instance, with SAA, how do you use SAA for that developmental agenda when you own less than 50%?
No, look, you can still influence in terms of developmental agenda for SAA is the roots, for example, for me, because it's going to contribute to domestic markets. Not domestic markets, your international markets. Let's say, for example, we say South Africa, in terms of the tourism growth, we would want to have China, India, Nigeria as our markets, and Europe. All you do is influence SAA to have those routes, because it will contribute to the economy in terms of those markets coming to South Africa and the tourism growing. And we know tourism, in terms of our country, is one of the labor-intense markets. So you are able to achieve that, Clement. It's how you do it. So in certain instances, you'd have a particular percentage. But in certain instances, like I'm saying, you can't have private ownership, participation in DINEL. What is important in DINEL, for example, it's cooperation or partnership at project level. Then you are able to have partnership. You go to other countries where you produce arms. Then you do partnership with them. You produce that, you do that. But on ownership level overall, we don't think that DINEL should have private owners.
Yeah, well,
so there are those state entities that you'll identify and say, here overall you can have private owners, but you can project-based partnership to advance what you are trying to achieve. And there will be those that you can identify to say, this ones must be wholly owned by government. This ones must be partially owned by government. This one can be privatized, and because they do not have a need in terms, they do not have a role in terms of developmental mandate, but they are a burden to the fiscus.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing, especially about SAA, Eskom, and how you play that developmental agenda when you're opening the door to this private sector involvement. Energy.
No, on the energy, for example, yeah. Eskom. Eskom, remember, that's why we said we must have separation of Eskom.
Mm-hmm.
The generation part, the transmission part, and the distribution part. On the generation, we've already opened for private participation in terms of your IPPs.
Mm.
So you are able to have private sector participating, but the state remaining as well participating. So it's a dual model there. And then you have the distribution. On the distribution side, we do not want private sector participation, because you don't want anyone who's going to try and influence who gets connected, who has access to the grid. So you want that wholly to be owned by the state. And then on the distribution side, you'd know that some of the municipalities already play in that side. So you are opening up for municipalities, because SALGA has been vocal about this, for more municipalities to have a playing in that area. But again, we talk about energy company number two, which we are bringing to this discussion, and I'll come to that. I know you, your head is like, energy company number two, this is where we're coming. We are saying on energy number company number two, we have learned that we put all our eggs in one basket as ANC or as government, which is Eskom. When Eskom hit challenges, we were stuck. No option. But secondly, we have said that we do not want monopolies. So we would want competition. Currently, Eskom is a monopoly. So bringing energy number two would assist us to be able to still fulfill our mandate and have competition in that. And the issue around that is that you do not want continuously, while we are allowing for private sectors to participate. So we'll redefine, once conference agrees, if they agree with us, this is one of the things that we'll bring forth. If they agree with us to say, yes, we want you to have energy number two, we'll go and redefine its mandate. Other countries, if you look at them that we compare ourselves with, they do not have one energy company as the state. They have several of them. And therefore, it gives them the leverage to be able to play and also ensure that energy security. Somebody asked me, how are you going to fund it?
I was about to ask. If you need capital.
But if we are rationalizing those state-owned entities, I can tell you, if you have 700, Clement, of entities that you do not need, so that's where the money should
be. Minister,
so we can be able to say to National Trade
Isn't what we need additional capacity? I mean, if you've got IPPs and you've got this additional capacity supplementing what we have on the grid, why would you need Eskom 2.0?
You need additional capacity, but the base load is important. So how are we going to ensure that we continue to operate in terms of efficiency and also be able to fulfill our development mandate? As I'm saying, we have our eggs in one basket. If tomorrow Eskom can't provide electricity, we have majority of South Africans, in terms of the constitution, we have an obligation to provide for them.
And
electricity.
It's been failing over the last couple of years.
That's the issue. That's why we are saying, because we had our eggs in one basket. So diversify the sector, diversify energy provision, so that you are not dependent on one entity to fulfill your responsibilities.
Does government. This mean that you build new power plants?
Yes.
But who's going to give you loans for that? Because banks, I mean, I was speaking to Sim Chabalala, the Group Standard Bank CEO, a lot of banks are taking a decision that they're not going to be financing the building of new power plants. I mean, we talk about the just transition.
Remember, Clement, that's where we're missing it. The funding is on coal. That is being stopped. But there's issues around clean coal that we can explore. Nuclear is a clean coal energy plant. But as well, you can blend that Eskom energy company number two can also play in the renewable space and build plants and battery storage. Currently, one of the challenges in the energy space is that we are, yes, building capacity. But if you look at the batteries across the globe, they're not available. So, and the prices on those that are available is higher, that it's unaffordable. So you still have, and that you still have some time before you can even move fully to clean energy. But there's opportunities that we can utilize, for example, of technology such as clean energy and other mechanisms, hydrogen and all those things. We'd want to explore that. But we talk about just transition, Clement. We're not overnight collapsing everything that we have, because otherwise we'll be in the
block. Here's the issue, though.
So we're talking about 20 to 30 year transition at the pace that we can afford, and therefore that's why we'll be able to look at. It's not only markets in South Africa that will fund, the global markets that will fund.
Yeah. Here's the issue, though. as the ANC, you did try to build, and you have built new power plants, and yes, coal, and there were defects there. As the ANC government, you committed, was it in 2019, that you would have about, I think the president said between, was it 3,000 and 4,000, or between 4,000 and 6,000 megawatt of renewable energy. But how much of that is on the grid? So when you talk about Eskom 2.0, why should South Africans believe you're even capable of that when you have not met your promises of adding new renewables at the rate that you committed, when you've built power plants that have had defects?
No, Clement, we need to understand the renewable space. Building one, it takes 2 years in terms of construction. That's the first thing. So by the time the IPP bid window is opened and the time it comes into full operation is 2 years. Mm. That's one.
That's why we should have started earlier.
Yes, there we agree. Yeah. The bid window one and two were as well quite expensive and all those things, but they were tested. Then coming to the issue of renewables, with solar and wind, for example, the energy availability of that is different to a base load, because we do not have batteries. So what you generate must go to the grid immediately and be utilized. If it's not utilized, it's wasted. So the usage of it is almost, if I'm not mistaken, of solar should be around 40 to 60% of usage. So if you have a plant that is meant to produce 2,000 megawatts, you are likely to utilize about 1.6 or 1.4. So that's the reality. So that's why the understanding of how that renewable space is working is important.
All right, Minister, thank you so much for making time. I hope you find coffee somewhere.
I'm looking for it. You can hear even my voice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.